Hello, and welcome to the PION AG conference call on the financial results for the first half of 2020. My name is Lydia, and I will be your coordinator for today's event. Please note, this conference is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions live on today's call. This may be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. You may do this at any time. I will now hand you over to your host, Rolf Stener, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lydia, for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us for PION's earnings call on the financial results of the first half of 2020. My name is Rolf Stener. I am PION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Dr. Jim Phillips, PION's Chief Operating Officer, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our Chief Financial Officer. I have to excuse, of course, Jim is Chief Executive Officer. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the H1 2020 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take your questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been on our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and a replay will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should now start right on with the presentation. Jim, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dr. Jim Phillips, and as you know, I'm the Chief Executive of PION AG. We're going to start with a brief corporate update and overview for those of you who don't know us so well. We'll talk a little bit about remimazolam itself, and then move to the financials for the half year. I think just to start to say that this year has been a very important year for PION, with already in the first half of the year, our first approval in Japan, and a lot of progress in other areas that we'll allude to, and many things that are now happening in the second half of the year. To remind you of us, we're an emerging specialty pharmaceutical business. Our focus is anesthesia and critical care. We have many commercial partners now around the world, and the first of those have now launched our product in the second half. We're very excited about our future prospects. Remimazolam, as you'll hear, our leading drug candidate, has multiple approvals now in Asia in the start of the year and since the end of June, also in America and in China. At the end of the first half, we had more than 12.4 million euro in cash. Of course, that has been, since the ending of the first half of the year, has been substantially increased through milestone payments on the FDA approval. Supervisory board, I won't dwell on the board itself, but to say we have a stable and very supportive board working with us through the last years. Our strategy, this is really to bring remimazolam, as you can now see, to market over these next 2 years. It's really important for us, both through our partners and where we do it ourselves, to build a commercial capability in all the attractive geographies for anesthesia and critical care. Also, we want to make sure the launches of remimazolam go extremely well and in-license complementary medications to our own portfolio to enable us to grow our revenue. Key target for us is to reach profitability within the coming years and become a leader in our field with a very fast revenue growth. In terms of our own commercialization plans, we're mainly conducting in Europe HTA work, so there's healthcare technology assessment work. So we're doing health economic assessments. We're working very hard on preparing all of the dossiers that are required for good pricing discussions with the regulatory authorities post-approval in Europe next year, as we hope. We're also looking to build our own distribution infrastructure, but this is important that we do this in a risk-reduced way. So as we can find more products and add them to our portfolio, we will be able to roll out our own commercial enterprise. And we also consider out-licensing for territories where we don't see that opportunity to be realistic. A lot of work also going on this year in supply chain. This is both for ourselves and, of course, for our partners, because we are a key API and drug product supplier for most of our partners around the world. So for our partners and for ourselves and the product sales, we need to ensure that that supply chain is robust and capable of delivering the amounts of remunizolam that the market needs. So we have this year been establishing many structures, procedures to get the permits where we need. We now have a permit to supply drug products in Europe, which is good. And this came from the Dutch authorities earlier this year. And we're continuing to build out that infrastructure so that commercial deliveries, of course, the first have already gone to Japan, but for other territories are ready when those territories launch. The management board, I think there's no changes here. We're all on the call. So myself as chief executive, Abdul, our chief financial officer, and Jürgen, chief development officer. And I think what you see now is delivery of the promise of remunizolam just beginning to appear through the concerted efforts of the management team and those who work with us, of course. Our listing, we are Frankfurt listed. We've been Frankfurt listed for a long time. The share price obviously is somewhat volatile, especially after the COVID days, but we have been a very liquid share in the last 6 months with almost 50% of our shares traded. Our market capitalization is just under 200 million euro, and we haven't really issued many shares this year. We've only issued a few where conversion of a convertible loan note from Yorkville was completed. So the shares outstanding is pretty stable at this point. The target of the analyst shows a mean target of around 4.72. So there's considerable upside potential in our share price given where we are today. In terms of what will drive value in the next half of the year, the second half, the first two things which we've already announced are the Japanese and the China commercial launches. The Japanese launch, which we know has been very successful, happened in the last 2 weeks with very, very good preparatory work by our partner, Mundi Pharma and KK in Japan. And Renfu, which is the commercial arm of Yuchang Human Well, has just launched in China. The economics are a little bit different there because they produce their own drug and API. So we aren't supplying them with products, but we still get a good royalty percentage from these sales. So these two are really the leaders into the commercial arena. And it's a little bit unusual that Asia is the first market to launch in rather than the US. But we're very excited about both these launches and the royalties and revenues they will drive going forward. The next thing that we think will drive value is the European pivotal phase 3 study in general anesthesia. We're expecting to generate headline data over the coming months. As you'll see later on, this study was stopped slightly early because of the COVID-19 epidemic, and rightfully so, but it didn't stop us being able to have enough patients through to potentially be able to meet the endpoints in the study, so that the statistical powering was unaffected. And then we have two other key value drivers in the second half of the year. So the next one would be the marketing approval in South Korea, which we hope will come just around the end of the year. And then that will be followed by a launch by our partner, Hana Farm, there. And, of course, finally, a very important launch in the U.S. market. This we can't give you an exact date for because Acacia Pharma, our partner, are working with the DEA, so the Drug Enforcement Agency, to get the drug scheduled, which is a critical part of the work prior to launch. And then we would expect launch probably in the early part of Q4. So these things we see as driving value over the coming months of the year. In terms of our reserves, and these numbers, remember, are the 30th of June. So we had cash of just over 12 million euro at the 30th of June. But since that time, we've had an FDA approval milestone of 15 million from Cosmo. We've had R&D cash tax credits expected of 3 to 4 million. And we also have available the EIB loan facility of 20 million. So there is a very good cash and cash reserve available to us of around 50 million, which means that we still have 2.5 to 3 years runway for the company as we grow our sales. So there is no imminent or necessary need to come to the market to raise cash. In terms of COVID-19 for us, really COVID-19 has had only minor direct effects at our group of companies to date. Our staff are very capable to work at home. Zoom and WebEx all through these months. And really, the only key event that occurred because of COVID was the earlier completion of patient recruitment at the phase 3 general anesthesia study. But this was okay for us, as I think Jürgen will explain in a few minutes. The likely budget impact of COVID is really not applicable to us. In some areas, we've saved resources, and in others, we've spent more. So, again, with supply chain, component parts of our manufacturing have not really been affected. Our schedules for manufacturing, yes, there have been some minor delays, but not major delays. So the launch timeframes have been able to be met. The other effects of COVID-19, of course, have been in the area of compassionate use. And we now have two compassionate use programs. The first in Milan at San Rafael Hospital, where essentially they approved use of ringlam for sedation in ICU patients in June. This has been very helpful for us to help the hospitals short of sedative anesthetics during the epidemic. And of course, in Italy now, the stress on the system is much lower, so keep the program open, but we don't expect to need to use it at the moment further. The other was a more national compassionate use program in Belgium. So this was granted post the end of the first half of the year, and it can be used in two ways in Belgium. So it can be used for sedation of intensive care patients with COVID-19, or it can be used as a substitute for general anesthesia in where there are shortages, where people need to carry on using general anesthetics. This is limited to patients who have experience with our product in clinical trials. And again, we deliver the product free of charge. It's important for us to both support the hospitals that are treating patients with COVID-19. And of course, it's also helpful to the company that doctors are gaining more experience with our product. In terms of the launch sequence, so of course Japan has now launched in the general anesthesia indication. China has now launched in procedural sedation indication. Too early to give you sales figures or feedback on the uptake in the markets, but we do know Japan had many university and general hospitals already listing the product for use on the day of launch. So we're very excited about those two launches, and then of course the US coming through towards the end of the year. Now I'm going to hand to Jürgen to just talk you through the Remimislam slides around the product.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jim. So we have development of Remimislam in three indications, and regard to two indications, general anesthesia and procedural sedation, we have completed development work and are now in the marketing authorization and or launch phase. The ICU sedation is currently not in our focus. The decision on whether and how to continue that is pending. Next slide, please. So, no, that was too fast. If you could go back one slide, please. So, yes. We believe that remimazolam combines the best of two rather good worlds, which are already existing in the market, but, of course, which can be overcome with the better. Propofol is a drug which is very often used, which is characterized by a rapid onset, predictable recovery time, but it has the disadvantage of causing both hemodynamic and respiratory regression. There is no reversal agent, and there is pain on injection. Although the other very often used drug in this field, midazolam, has a lot of advantages. It has very low safety issues. There is a reversal agent available, and during the procedure, less resources are used and needed for supervision. But on the other side, midazolam has a very variable action time, prolonged periods of sedation. There is, even if the reversal agent is used, the risk of resedation, and overall the drug has a slow onset. The good thing about remimazolam is that it combines the advantages of both drugs, as I just outlined, without having the negative aspects like cardiovascular or respiratory depression, or variable or prolonged periods of sedation, risk of resedation, and slow onset. So basically, remimazolam offers the opportunity to substitute both midazolam and propofol in an attractive market setting. Next slide, please. So there is a need of improvement in the sedation anesthesia space. We strongly believe that based on what is known, that the overall safety of these procedures can be improved, especially by the avoidance of hypertension. A reversal agent, as we have it available for remimazolam, is of a great advantage. The improved hemodynamic stability is a very positive factor. We'll come back to that later. There is less requirement for vasopressors, which might address hemodynamic difficulties, but also, of course, are not free of their own side effects. And in particular, we believe that remimazolam is better suited for aging patient populations as we see them more and more in physicians' practices and hospitals. With regard to efficiency, remimazolam has the advantage of presenting a very predictable overall procedure time, which may transform into the advantage of for the physician and for the patient to have an improved patient throughput, for example, in the context of colonoscopy in colorectal cancer screening. With regard to the patient experience, we have no problem with the amnesia of the procedure, and on the other hand, patients very fast recover very fast with regard to regaining their cognitive functions. So the back to normal is achieved quicker than with midazolam, and that, of course, as I already mentioned, is improving the compliance to follow-up screening. Overall, it has been reported under remimazolam an improved patient satisfaction and compliance. And as I already mentioned before, an additional economic advantage is provided by the reduced resources which are needed for supervision. Next slide, please. With regard to chemical class of remimazolam, it is the first in class of an ultra-short-acting intravenous benzodiazepine, which has the advantage that the benzodiazepine is a very well-known group class of drugs, which gives a good safety margin. But again, it's also innovation because it's the first benzodiazepine agent, which is so ultra-short-acting. With regard to the intellectual property, we have good protection via our patents on the Bezalate salt, which gives us protection in the U.S. till 2031 at least. On the formulation patent, we have protection until at least 2033 in the European Union. On the dosing patent, protection in Japan until at least 2033. And, of course, we work permanently on growing our IP portfolio to secure an attractive period of market exclusivity in the major markets. With regard to the safety, we have currently more than 2,900 volunteers or patients, mostly, of course, patients, in our database, which gives us a good grip on the safety of this drug. With regard to the indications, procedural sedation is now in the regulatory phase in the U.S., completed. In Europe, it's ongoing, and in China, it's also completed. General anesthesia is in Europe at the end of clinical development. In Japan, it's already on the market, and Russia and South Korea are also preparing to go either to submission or to complete the submission. We have, as I also mentioned before, further potential in ICU sedation, which will need to be evaluated, and that offers overall an estimated market opportunity for more than $500 million globally for each indication alone. The results we have from our development studies today indicate that we have a solid efficacy and safety in all studied populations. We have a rapid onset and offset of action. We achieve with remimazolam an appropriate depth of sedation, and we have, and that is in particular a major advantage over propofol, favorable hemodynamic stability. Next slide, please. Now let me go to the individual. No, Jim, you would like to do that? It's about the U.S. market size.
Yes, I can take this. Of course, for procedural sedation, the U.S. is the largest market in the world, and what drives that market growth at the moment is this very fast growth of colorectal cancer screening, where you recognize the early signs of potential cancerous polyps early, and then you can remove and much reduce the incidence of the cancer. So it's a very strong health economic argument to do this procedure under sedation. Therefore, it's covered by most of the insurance plans in the U.S. And by Medicare, too. And, you know, the dynamics in the U.S. are that more than 4 million patients are reaching the age of 50 every year and become eligible for the screening program, and they tend to screen every few years. So it's a repeat procedure, which numbers of the order of 20 million per annum, although there are more than 40 million procedures per annum using procedural sedation in the U.S. But when you look at endoscopy and colonoscopy, it's of the order of more than half of that total. So this gives a very, very attractive population to work with when launching the product. I think I'll carry on if it's okay, Jürgen. The clinical development program in the US was also done in China too, and I think what you can see from the slide is that there were three main studies, two phase threes and a safety study. And what you see in the blue of each of the three charts is a very high success rate for procedures using remimazolam. If they got a placebo, obviously the success rate was very low. But with midazolam too, a much lower success, I mean completion of the procedure as started. So we can see the advantages of using our product there. And then in the colonoscopy study, you see the business case, which comes around to the ability of clinics and ambulatory surgical centers to treat more patients in a given time period, whether it be a day or a week. And why is that? Because this fast onset and offset from the time of the start of a medication to the start of procedure, you're seeing a difference of around 15 minutes earlier start with Remi versus midazolam. And then from the end of the procedure to being fully alert, another difference of around 7 minutes. So you're looking at a saving per patient of around 20 to 22 minutes. And that means you can do extra procedures as a clinic per day, and each of those extra procedures effectively both generates revenue and treats more patients for those centers. So it therefore is a very simple economic argument in the U.S. market. Jürgen, do you want to take back now?
Now, moving to the procedural sedation in Europe, which is a regulatory procedure now, we submitted a marketing authorization application to the EMA, which was based on the completed U.S. development program, and that submission occurred in November 2019, and that will you want to talk about the commercialization, Jim?
Sure. So we've already described a little bit of this, but our plans are we're working on health economics at the moment and the HTA assessments, getting the dossiers prepared and ready for submission. And then building up the distribution structures in Europe is going to really be done once we know that we have other products to add to our portfolio to make running a sales force ourselves feasible and economic. But we'll also look at our licensing for certain territories where it is not economic. You know, were we unable to license another product in, then we would consider our licensing all of Europe in that scenario. But this is an area that the company is working very hard at the moment. So now we move to general anesthesia, and I hand back again to Jürgen.
Thank you, Jim. Next slide, please. So just giving the framework and the indication general anesthesia for the beginning, there is widespread agreement that there is a lot of room for improvement. We have seen in this area a little innovation in anesthetic drug development in the recent years. On the other side, we have an ever more aging population with increasing levels of comorbidity and a raise in complication rates, which are associated with general anesthesia and surgery, which is also linked to the phenomenon that more and more elderly patients receive surgery, which is a new development compared to a situation 20, 30 years ago where this population just did not go to surgery. There is, on the other hand, still a low awareness concerning postoperative complications and mortality related to intraoperative hypotension events. And intraoperative hypotension is, in fact, a strong predictor of myocardial necrosis, leading to a higher one-year post-surgical mortality. And even short durations of intraoperative hypotension are known to be associated with acute kidney, myocardial injury, cardiac complications, and the mortality within the first 30 days after surgery. And there is definitely a connection between the intraoperative hypertension and postoperative cognitive dysfunctions. With remimazolam, there is a significantly lower incidence of hypertension in surgical patients undergoing general anesthesia compared to propofol, and therefore remimazolam offers an opportunity to impact patient care and the outcomes of general anesthesia. Next slide, please. Just to give you as an example, perioperative myocardial injury, which is a common, silent, and very often deadly consequence of hypotension during surgical procedures. This myocardial injury is seen in about 8 million adults worldwide. At first, 93% are without symptoms, but we have a mortality of 4% after 30 days, and overall 8.5% have in this 30 days period either myocardial infarction, cardiac arrest, or death. Next slide. This is just the publication which highlights that has been published in the JAMA last year, and it shows clearly that also the depths of anesthesia and postoperative delirium are linked. On the other hand, it also shows that a reduction in hypertension-related myocardial injury would likely save many lives, and therefore the choice of the anesthetic dose remains critically important in the context of an aging surgical patient population, and the role of good quality, safe anesthesia is as important as ever, and we believe that remimazolam comes in here. Next slide. So now let me talk about the general anesthesia study, phase 3 study versus propofol. Jim already mentioned this study. We have conducted and which is now evaluated, and hopefully we will be able later this year to provide you with the results. Just to give an overview on this study, so we have overall included 424 patients. It was a multi-center randomized and active controlled European phase 3 trial undergoing elective surgery in Germany, France, Italy, Switzerland, the Netherlands, the UK, and Belgium. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, we decided to complete in April this year when we had recruited 424 patients into this study. This was agreed to by the Data Monitoring Committee of the study, and the reason for doing that was that we had already reached the sample size necessary for properly calculating both endpoints of the study, as well the primary efficacy endpoint as the key secondary endpoint, which focuses on hypotension. And we had oversized a little bit the study in the planning because we want to provide additional safety information, more patients for the safety database, and in the complex situation of the coronavirus pandemic, we decided to take this patient from other studies, from licenses, which is also an option, so that we could complete the study at the beginning of the pandemic. As already mentioned, the top-line data of the trial are expected in the second half of 2020, and the primary objective, just to repeat, is, of course, efficacy, which in this case is non-inferiority of remimazolam compared to propofol. You may remember that I mentioned earlier that propofol is, with regard to efficacy, quite a good drug, and the key secondary objective is then the improved hemodynamic stability compared to propofol, so to see what our advantage is with regard to propofol, as concerns this very critical and essential parameter, hemodynamic stability. Next slide, please. So, as already mentioned, we have completed recruitment in April, and our plans are now that once we have received the approval by the EMA for the already submitted procedural sedation dossier, we would file an extension of this dossier to also include general anesthesia as planned. This extension procedure offers the advantage that it's in general shorter because it's an abbreviated application than it is the timeline is needed for a fully new dossier, and therefore we believe that this extension will be processed faster. Next slide, please. Now, just to give you the background data on why we believe that we will have also in this European phase 3 study a major advantage with regard to hypotension as compared to propofol. These are data from phase 2-3 pivotal trial from Japan, which has been part of the dossier approved in Japan, which of course will also be part of the dossier we are going to submit in Europe. You see if you go for hypotension and you look for patients with a mean arterial pressure under 60 millimeters mercury, that in the first hour of intubation you have a difference of about 41%, so 41% less hypotension with remimazolam in both dosing groups than under propofol. If you look to what is needed in case you have an hypotension which necessitates treatment, you look for the need of vasopressors, drugs which increase the blood pressure, and here you have a similar result that we can reduce the need for vasopressors, especially in the lower dosing remimazolam group by 37%. The lower dosing is what we also apply in Europe. And then finally, we also have a clear advantage. We have seen a clear advantage in favor of remimazolam as regards the avoidance of too deep sedation. Here again, we are close to 44% less to deep sedation as compared to propofol. Next slide, please.
Okay, I'll take over now. Thank you, Jürgen. So our launch population for Europe when we do get to general anesthesia is going to be very targeted. We're going to look at the high-risk patients, i.e. the older ones who have comorbidities, and these we call the ASA 3-4 patients. So whilst there are more than 70 million procedures under general anesthesia per year, you then cut that number down to those who have general anesthesia and those who have belong in the higher risk group, which is actually the majority of people undergoing general anesthesia, or 50%. The aging population continues to drive that market. And what this really allows us to do is by using the different differences between our product in terms of safety and hypertension versus propofol to pick out the patients who are most likely to benefit from using remimazolam, to show that benefit to the authorities through the health technology assessments, and therefore to get better pricing to launch the product. So that shows our strategy. We're not going to try and take all the patients in general anesthesia, at least not in the early years, but to work against the higher risk groups and therefore show a better benefit for the health authorities and the health payers. Coming back to the commercial side, so At this point in time, of course, we're very reliant on our partners for product launches, and just to come back again to Japan, as they've launched first, so Mundi Pharma, NKK in Japan, launched about 2 weeks ago, but they'd had a very effective pre-launch campaign and have many hospital listings where the product can be used immediately. So we're very excited about that launch. It appears to have had a very successful first phase, and we're looking forward, of course, to reporting royalties and revenues in due course. Then in China, on the left-hand side of the slide, Yichang Humanwell. So the approval was given recently and was followed very swiftly by Renfu's launch into the market, making available in hospital and pricing as well very quickly. Renfu have around 1,000 reps on the road in China. And so China is potentially a very large market for us. And again, we'll be looking forward to updating you in the future on revenues and royalties that we see from the Chinese market. Then in the US, Acacia Pharma, who joined us as a partner in January, and we're very, very excited to be working with them through to the launch, hopefully in the Q4 of this year, after the DEA, so that's the Drug Enforcement Agency scheduling of the product, as it's a scheduled drug in the US market. Of course, we'll be updating the market as that continues. And then our other partners in South Korea, Hana Pharm, we're in the middle of the registration process for general anesthesia, we would hope to see that approval come through before the end of the year. Hana have also added further territories to their license this year, including countries like the Philippines, Vietnam, in the Southeast Asia region. So they are a very important regional partner for us. And then the bottom two in Canada, PharmaScience, we're just waiting to hear news from them around their intention to file based on the U.S. approval. And our farm in Russia, likewise, using U.S. approval, particularly in some of the MENA and countries in Turkey, to form the basis for their filings in those regions. So now I'm going to hand to Abdul, who's going to take you through the financials at this point.
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start with the financing agreements that Jim mentioned earlier. The first one is a financing agreement with the European Investment Bank for an unsecured loan of up to 20 million euros that we signed a year ago. The loan is available until June 2021, and it can be drawn down in three tranches. For each of the tranches, specific conditions must be met for drawdown. First tranche of 5 million is already available, and the other two tranches could also become available still this year. We have so far not yet drawn down the loan. The second agreement relates to the issue of unsecured convertible notes with a nominal amount of up to 15 million euros in up to three tranches. The first tranche of 5 million euros was issued in September 2019. This tranche has now been completely converted into a total of 2.4 million new shares. We are not planning to issue further convertible notes under this agreement. Now let's move to the P&L on the next slide. As you can see, revenues amounted to 3.5 million euros and mainly resulted from milestone payments in connection with the market approval of remimazolam in Japan this year, January, and the license extension with Hana Pharm to include additional countries in Southeast Asia that we also signed in January this year. Revenues of 7.5 million euros in the prior year period resulted from the milestone payment from Cosmo in connection with the submission of the dossier to the FDA. On the upper right-hand side, you can see that research and development expenses slightly increased from 6.2 million euros to 6.4 million euros in the first half of this year. The R&D expenses mainly related to the European phase 3 study in general anesthesia, for which the data analysis is currently ongoing. Compared to last year, SG&A expenses increased by 1.3 million euros to now 3.6 million euros. This increase mainly relates to higher selling expenses, particularly in connection with pre-commercial activities, and the setup of supply chain for Rémy Mazelin, which Jim has explained earlier. In total, we show a net loss of 6.1 million euros compared to a net income of 0.6 million euros in the prior year period. The net loss includes tax income from R&D tax credits in the amount of 0.7 million euros. Now I'd like to move to the selected balance sheet items and an overview of headcount on the next slide. The total assets decreased by 4.1 million euros compared to the end of 2019. This mainly results from an increase of prepaid expenses and other assets in the amount of 2.2 million euros, as well as an increase of inventories in the amount of 0.4 million euros on the one hand, and a decrease of cash and cash equivalents on the other hand. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, cash decreased by 6.4 million euros compared to end of 2019 and amounted to 12.4 million euros. This decrease essentially comes from negative cash flows from operating activities in the amount of 6.4 million euros. As you can see on the lower left-hand side, equity decreased by 3 million euros to 11.7 million euros. This is mainly a result of the net loss for the first half year on the one hand and the issue of 1.5 million new shares in course of the conversion of the mentioned convertible notes. The equity ratio was 56%. The staff development is illustrated on the lower right-hand side. Compared to an average number of 44 employees in 2019, we had staff of 43 employees on average in the first half of this year. Finally, I'd like to give an outlook for the full year 2020. For the purpose of comparison, you can see actual figures for 2019 in the left column. Regarding revenues, we expect these to amount to approximately 20 million euros, thereof 15 million euros in connection with the market approval in the US, which we will book as revenue in Q3. And the milestone payment has already been received in July. Further revenues relate to the market approvals in Japan and China, our license extension with Hanapharm, and a potential market approval in South Korea. Royalties from commercialization of Rémy Mazelin in the US, Japan, and China are expected in a small amount of less than 1 million euros. Given the ongoing development activities, including the European Phase 3 study, we will continue to incur R&D expenses, which we estimate to be in a range of about 10 to 12 million euros for the full year. SG&A expenses will increase to approximately 7 to 9 million euros, mainly because of the pre-commercial activities and the build-up of the supply chain that we mentioned earlier. We expect tax income from UK tax credits on part of the research and development expenses in an amount of approximately 1 to 1.5 million euros. The amount of up to 0.5 million euros that we previously guided for 2020 was based on a change in calculation and capping rules that is already enacted, but this change was postponed by a year at short notice. In total, we therefore now expect a positive net result of approximately 0.5 to 4 million euros for the full year. Regarding our liquidity, cash at hand secures cash reach at least into the second half of 2021 based on current planning. Thank you so far. With this, I hand back to Ralf.
Yes, thank you very much, Jim, Jürgen, and Abdel for the presentation. And now we are ready to start the Q&A session.
If you would like to ask a question live on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and I will advise you when it is your turn. Again, that is star 1 now for questions live over the phone. We have our first caller that's come through. Our first question comes from Simon Scholes of First Berlin. Simon, when you're ready, please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. I've got two. You just mentioned that you'd had a pretty successful pre-launch phase in Japan. I was just wondering to what extent COVID has made has caused you problems in the pre-launch phase or caused Acacia problems in the pre-launch phase in the US. And then second, you mentioned that the decision on the ICU is pending. Should we take pending to mean by the end of this year?
Okay, thanks for the question, Jim. I'll answer. Regarding Japanese launch, which was for general anesthesia, and obviously Japan has not been that badly affected by COVID, I think that tells its own story. As far as the US goes, I think that the limitation in the US is current. Our approval was delayed a little bit, partly because of COVID, we think. But in terms of pre-launch activities, I think that our partner Acacia is working very hard on those. They're adapting to a new environment. So I'll give you an example. So all of the data coming out of the US and all of the intelligence around what's happening in the hospital setting in the US is that increasingly all elective surgery and procedural work is being done outside of the hospitals. That whatever is going on is not really being done in the hospital setting. The hospitals are reserved for COVID and other patients. And so the ambulatory surgical centers, the ASCs, are now doing more than 90% of all of the elective procedures, is what I've heard. Now, I don't have, a valid source to back up that data, but it's coming to me from several different places that this is one of the effects that's happening. Now, you can look at that two ways. It makes it slightly easier, in a way, for Acacia to pre-market. But on the other hand, they have this problem of not really being able to put reps on the road into meetings. But I think I'd point to Japan again and say that the Japanese have done a very, very exciting and very detailed set of web detailing, web conferencing, and it's been very successful. So I don't think that you can say that Acacia haven't been working very hard and haven't been able to prepare the market, which is what they're still, of course, doing, because we're a couple of months away from launch, we think.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Jim, do you want to answer also the question on ICU and when we are going to...
Yeah, so sorry. Sorry, the ICU. So before the end of the year, yes. I mean, what we're doing is building a business case, as any company would do. You look at the investment required, the returns on that investment, and the life of the product in terms of patents and patent extension is possible. So we're working with our partners to gather all of that data and then make an investment decision before the end of the year.
Okay, thanks. Great.
Again, if you would like to ask a question live on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and you'll be announced for your turn. Again, that is star 1 now. We have no incoming questions at this time. I return the call over to you.
Thank you very much for the questions. And to everybody, I would like to say thank you for joining us for Pion's earnings call on the financial results of the first half of 2020. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but of course, please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the replay MP3 will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in Pion.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, please stay connected.